Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I will be talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 29th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 82 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be studying aphorism number 59. It is very lengthy, and we've been doing it for a few days now. Fortunately, and hopefully our internet connection is working okay, because there's been kind of slow lines going on lately. And I welcome everyone who's listening to this special show. I usually begin with some inspirations, and typically from Twitter, but we have a little kind of Twitter place on our own website, Homeopathy World Community, where you can put an update about what's happening in your life. And Dr. Arundam Dutta had written on his update a quote from Colton that says, "He that studies books alone will know how things ought to be, and he that studies men will know how things are." I wanted to send that to you. And there are a lot of things going on the network, and we do have some news. Vera, how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks, Debbie. How are you?
Doing good on this fine Sunday. I hope to get out and do a walk, get some sun in, and clean up around here. Before we get into the news, the personal news, let me just say a few things about the network, which I'm so pleased. We have a lot of active members who have been reading and blogging and writing very, very great discussions about health and healing and homeopathy. Dr. Jagat Manik has put up a new post about chronic fatigue syndrome and homeopathy, and I've written a big one about the whooping cough epidemic and its return, and hopefully people will put up some more information about that. There's also news about the swine flu being related to narcolepsy and the fact that the new influenza vaccine has been banned in Australia due to seizures and coma. So there are a lot of, side effects or repercussions from having a vaccination, and this has been big news to the public and in the media. One really big piece of news is the fact that in Pakistan, the flooding continues. We have a large number of people on our network from Pakistan who will be posting updates. And on to our own news about the show. Would you like to tell the folks what's happening, or do you want me to say?
Well, we're going to be putting the show on hold at present due to prior commitments. And so we won't be broadcasting. You want to take it further, Debbie?
Sure. I do want to encourage people to go ahead and continue the study with Vera on her blog, because she has made a commitment. Vera, I'm talking to you too. You have made a commitment to yourself, and you want to fulfill it. And although we have kind of taken a sidetrack for you by doing the radio show, it takes everyone out there listening must know that it takes a tremendous amount of energy, commitment, time, away from other things that we could be doing, and just to put it all together and to provide this service to the public for free. And we will, you know, it is my intention to continue in some form, and I will be reevaluating how to do it, especially during this season when it is coming up to the fall and kids are getting back to school and things like that. I would like to just read a poem that came into my mind when I realized we were going to put a pause on the show. It's called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep. So, before I cry, go ahead and get us into the Organon, because this is how I feel. There are miles to go before we sleep, and there's so much to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to. But I would like to get some sleep.
Yeah, I think that's the most serious problem.
Everybody knows. Okay, so we are going to do aphorism number 59.
Do you remember where you got to in Thursday's reading?
We got pretty far. Do you want to pick it up and not start from the beginning again?
Right.
Why don't we take it from where it says, by bitter substances and heating condiments, he tries to strengthen and warm the chronically weak and cold stomach. I can read from there.
Okay,
But in the secondary action of these palliatives, which are stimulating in their primary action only, the stomach becomes yet more inactive. Long-standing deficiency of vital heat and chilly disposition ought surely to yield to prescriptions of warm baths, but still more weak, cold, and chilly do the patients subsequently become. Severely burnt parts feel instantaneous alleviation from the application of cold water, but the burning pain afterwards increases to an indelible degree, and the inflammation spreads and rises to a still greater height by means of the sternutatory remedies that provoke a secretion of mucus. Coryza with stoppage of the nose of long standing is thought to be removed, but it escapes observation that the disease is aggravated all the more by these antagonistic remedies in their secondary action. And the nose becomes still more stopped by electricity and galvanism, which in their primary action greatly stimulate muscular action. Chronically weak and almost paralytic limbs were soon excited to more active movements. But the consequence, the secondary action, was complete deadening of all muscular irritability and complete paralysis. By venesections, it was attempted to remove chronic determination of blood to the head, but they were always followed by greater congestion. Ordinary medical practitioners know nothing better with which to treat the paralytic torpor of the corporeal and mental organs conjoined with unconsciousness, which prevails in many kinds of typhus, than with large doses of valerian, because this is one of the most powerful medicinal agents for causing animation and increasing the motor faculty. In their ignorance, however, they knew not that this action is only a primary action, and that the organism, after that is passed, most certainly falls back in the secondary antagonistic action into still greater stupor and immobility, that is to say, into paralysis of the mental and corporeal organs and death. They did not see that the very diseases they supplied most plentiful with valerian, which is in such cases an oppositely acting antipathic remedy, most infallibly terminated fatally. And I am putting a period there because that was one long sentence and I was waiting for when I could take a breath. Let's pause.
Okay.
Let's talk about that.
Well, we see one of the things that we see in this whole aphorism is Hahnemann talking about the primary and the secondary action. And it's something that I don't think that we have the time, the space, the scope to go into and give the attention it deserves within this show. But Hahnemann discusses primary and secondary action. And sometimes we're looking at, if you remember, I asked Gary a question about it in the last session when he was on. Sometimes we're looking at curative action in the primary. Sometimes we're looking at it in the secondary. And there are remedies where we're looking at both the primary and the secondary action in terms of their activity when we prescribe the remedy and are following the case. Hahnemann does discuss this. He discusses this in one of the aphorisms that we studied close to the beginning, where he was talking about medicines. Aphorism 251 talks about how some medicines whose power of alternating man's health consists chiefly in alternating actions, a kind of primary action symptoms that are in part opposed to each other. So the whole primary and secondary, and what is primary and what is secondary, is something that anyone really wanting to understand the action of remedies could do very well to study and see what the old masters write about it.
Okay, so maybe in your blog you'll put some reference for us where to search.
One classic example to me is coffee, because coffee in its primary action hypes people up, stimulant, but in its secondary action it actually brings people down. And I may have mentioned this in the past on the show, but there were times when I was working nights and I couldn't get to sleep. I would get home wired from the night work and couldn't sleep. And a doctor used to work night shifts gave me the tip of drinking a strong cup of coffee, which you would think would hype me up further. But he said when you're overtired, the coffee will bring you down. When you're overhyped, overstimulated, because then you're already in the state of the primary action. And so the coffee goes into its secondary action, which is to bring you down. And that's in crude.
That's in crude doses, and that's depending on how, what state you're already in, how it acts.
So we know that we can give homeopathic coffee. We give it to people sometimes when they can't sleep. We give the remedy coffee because we're going into the secondary action of the substance. We're not, the person is already in the primary action of the substance.
Okay, that's homeopathically, but In the crude state of using coffee, just like drinking a cup of coffee, it will act depending upon what state that you're in, whether you've been overworked and overtired and want to stay up or you want to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. It can be used both ways.
And some people get very disappointed. They're overtired. They drink coffee to stay awake and they find themselves falling asleep. And they say the coffee isn't working, and they don't realize that the coffee is working.
Oh.
It's working in its secondary action.
Okay. I've never heard about this, taking it in a crude dose for the secondary action. This is kind of new. And most of this aphorism number 59, he speaks in depth about opium. So also that must be the same type of primary and secondary action of paralysis, mobility and paralysis, both getting something to move along, or and then finding that in the secondary action there's complete stoppage of movement.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's complete the aphorism.
Okay.
How are we doing for time? Yeah.
Let's take a look.
That's fine. 14 minutes.
Yeah, fine. Yes.
Okay. Would you like me to carry on reading it?
Yes. Do ahead.
Okay. The old school physician rejoices that he is able to reduce for several hours the velocity of a small rapid pulse in cachectic, I don't know how to pronounce that word, patients, with the very first dose of uncombined purple foxglove, which in its primary action makes the pulse slower. Its rapidity, however, soon returns. Repeated and now increased doses effect an ever smaller diminution of its rapidity, and at length none at all. Indeed, in the secondary action, the pulse becomes uncountable. Sleep, appetite, and strength depart, and a speedy death is invariably the result, or else insanity ensues. How often, in one word, the disease is aggravated, or something even worse is affected by the secondary action of such antagonistic, antipathic remedies. The old school, with its false theories, does not perceive, but experience teaches it in a terrible manner. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Let's just hop to.
You first want to know how to pronounce that one word, cachectic, and it's related to cachexia, which is weakness and wasting of the body due to severe chronic illness. I'm glad somebody else has trouble reading some of these words, pronouncing them.
Yaskara says it's occurring during chronic disease or emotional disturbance. Mm-hmm. A devitalized constitution, bad habits. He also adds a comment, according to C.G. Pullman, Handbook of Homeopathic Practice, says dyscrasia is known in medicine as the chronic impoverishment in old age of the normal composition of the blood, with consequent development of alterations in the tissues. By cachexia is meant a long continued general dyscrasia, through which the nutrition of the body has already become undermined, so that in the whole outward appearance the condition of the patient is discernible. In the cachectic state, the derangements of nutrition which have set in are generally considered incurable.
Mm-hmm. So this is not a good condition to be in. And we usually attribute cachexia with people who have been on like chemo for cancer treatment or wasting away. Their vital force is very much diminished and they're typically losing weight. Mm-hmm. At least this is what comes into my mind as to reference when I hear that word.
Mm-hmm. Another point just to mention is foxglove, we know in homeopathy as digitalis.
Yes.
And Hahnemann refers to insanity. So I'm just kind of looking as we speak.
While you're researching that, there is a new post, I think it was put on by Dr. Rafiq, regarding the words that we use that are either the common word, the Latin word for many of our plants that we give as remedies, and there are many more words for particular plant remedies. And when I find that, I will give you a link and a post to that. It's an excellent one. And then Dr. Victor has given many, many references for us to research the plant and fungi genomics or whatever it's called for how we look up words.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. It's called Same Remedy But Different Names by Dr. Rafiq. Okay.
Okay. Now, also just a point from the proving of digitalis, because Hahnemann talks about use of foxglove And he talks about
insanity.
Yes, Tanaman talks about how sleep, appetite, and strength depart, and a speedy death is invariably the result, or else insanity ensues. And he's describing the function of foxglove. So I just had a quick look at the proving of digitalis in the Materia Medica Pura. And one of the elements that's described here is secret mania with disobedience and obstinacy. He tries to run away. Mind indifferent, as insensible to surroundings, as if he had not slept enough, but without sleepiness. There's a certain something happens to the mind of the digitalis patient, which is possibly why Hahnemann gives the reference there to insanity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what we can say is, not only do the primary and secondary action, is it a physical action, but the emotional, mental come into play when we utilize these remedies. And so you can actually observe in the patient not just the bowels getting slower, or the heart speeding up, or strength having more, or the pulse, checking the action of the pulse, but you'll see that their mind starts to be affected.
Mm-hmm.
And this typically, don't we consider the mind symptoms very, very important as to whether we're going in the right direction of cure?
Well, I think it's complicated in terms of that, because we're not just dealing with mind. Homeopathy moved into a very mind-focused way of practice, essentially as a result of Kent's teachings. But we're looking at disease state of which mind is a part. So a part as in a part, not a part as in separate, but the mind is very much part of the disease state. If we see that the mind during the disease state changed, like for example, even a simple thing, like if someone is usually quite argumentative, but when they get sick, they become very accommodating. However convenient it might be for us to have them accommodating, we need to get them back argumentative. And I know I'm not the only one who has felt certain relief with some patients, and some also friends and relatives, that when they're sick, they seem to be so sweet and pleasant. And I just want them to get back their bite and argumentativeness, because then I know that they're headed back for health. So the thing that to be aware of and to be wary of in terms of mind symptoms and the importance given to them is that we're not out to change the human being. We're out to restore the person to health. But we're not out to define if this person is usually argumentative or usually workaholic or usually, and they live with it and they're good with it. This is who they are. Homeopathy is not supposed to change their personality.
This is really, really important, because a lot of people think that is potentially what they're going to do. But if this is who you are, you will always be. If this is Vera, you will always be Vera, and I will always be Debbie in my personality, in how I relate, and everything else. But hopefully our coping mechanisms will be better, and mm-hmm. we will be happier in our state of being. And it won't make me be able to play the piano or the violin or sing a song any better or less than what I do. Although I know that a lot of athletes, Olympic athletes, have been treated homeopathically, and maybe it gives them strength or more fortitude or something to increase the potential that they already have. But it won't turn them from a basketball player into a swimmer. It's not going to do anything
I think also we need to define, like, if someone is generally slightly irritable, but they have a problem of constipation, and the constipation makes them extremely irritable because it also messes with their day. Can they go out? I've had patients sometimes who say that they need to allow 3 or 4 hours in the morning before they can leave the house because they're dealing with constipation. And that can make a person very irritable when their whole day is centered around that. So chances are that you see a reduction in irritability when a physical problem that inconveniences so much is resolved. But if the person is at base irritable, I wouldn't expect them to become sweet and accommodating. I would expect a certain reduction in irritability, possibly, but not a personality change. And in a way, if there is a personality change, I find it a bit worrying.
What you would like to see, though, is an improvement for the constipation so that they
Absolutely.
Can get on with their day and just be irritable for everybody anyway. I don't know.
I would expect them. Someone who has a short fuse has a short fuse. They learn to deal with their personality and their loved ones, and less loved ones learn to deal with it too. But when all the niggling irritations of problems or physical problems are removed and a person is made healthier, then it is possible that certain elements of the disposition will improve if that's part of what was aggravating them.
Mm-hmm. And so what you were saying earlier about the fact that this person is normally argumentative and then becomes so accommodating and sweet, it's kind of like a swing in the opposite direction to a place of just acceptance of not being able to be themselves, and because they can't be themselves, they'll just be somebody else. Say, okay, just walk all over me or whatever it is.
Sometimes it can be the fear that comes with dependency that can make a person more accommodating when they're usually argumentative. And when they feel stronger and they feel less dependent, they feel they're able to be argumentative, and it's a sign of health. And those around them feel he's back.
So basically, it goes into more depth than simply the emotional. You're getting further into why they're being argumentative or irritable because of more needs that the individual has, this one of dependency or being independent. We only have like a couple more minutes. Did we read the entire thing so we can finish up?
Yep, we read the entire thing.
Okay. And if there's anything else to be spoken about today regarding this particular aphorism, number 59 is what we're closing. And for those who did not hear the beginning of the show, this is going to be the last show of the season, and we don't know what will happen next, how or when it will be picked up again. And I do, you know, Vera, I have to thank you so, so much for providing this opportunity for learning, for collaboration, for communication, and for giving and sharing the entire community, because it's a tremendous amount.
Thanks for making it all possible with the show and all the arrangements and the study time also. It's been a pleasure.
And you know, everybody can still continue to listen to the shows, because since we've done 82 of them, they can go back and listen, review, make comments on the blogs, keep up with you as you continue on your blog. And I might even continue on the group blog, and who knows what can happen. You know, what is that saying? When a door closes, a window opens, something like that.
The message is
to have a, go ahead.
The message is that people should carry on reading. Just read the Organon.
Yes. And wishing everyone a good season and a new year of the fall when you're going back to school. So I will close saying thank you, thank you, thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.